Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Long time no see.
No, it's not. I just saw the other day, Chris.
No, it wasn't the other day. It was yesterday.
Oh, was it yesterday?
It was yesterday.
Oh, my gosh. Time flies when you're having fun. That's right. Well, it is good to see you, Chris.
Good to see you, too. So we're going to start this week's topics, this week's segment, with a speech that Donald Trump made a few weeks ago where he referred to some bank lenders as Shylocks and bad people.
Mm-hmm.
Shylock was a character in a Shakespearean play, The Merchant of Venice.
Okay.
It's apparently
really
considered...
testing our cultural knowledge here, Chris. Right?
So it's apparently considered offensive when used to describe Jewish people as a general term for... Or as a general term for moneylender.
Sure.
Who charges high interest rates. So Trump was using the term as a synonym for loan shark.
Mm-hmm.
So setting aside whether this is considered unequivocally offensive, what I find comical is how we've figured out how to gotcha both public and private
mm-hmm.
figures
right.
in these parsings of what people say or have said in the past. Most commonly, it seems that the parsings come from left-leaning circles in Hollywood, but the same folks in Hollywood don't think twice about, you know, the actual real problematic use of the Lord's name in vain.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's only acceptable to use Christian names in vain, not Muslim mm-hmm. ones in Hollywood
certainly,
and the
certainly
media.
Wouldn't say Allah and taking Allah's name
well, you,
in vain.
Well, you wouldn't even draw a picture of Muhammad
sure.
mm-hmm. in the media, right? Remember the Charlie Hebdo?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right. So can you talk about the trap that it seems we've fallen into where maybe, you know, terms that were used commonly that people weren't using in any seemingly nefarious
mm-hmm.
manner are now bringing down people's careers or their political office and how we might be focusing on the wrong words?
It's a really, really interesting topic. When I was doing my doctoral studies in leadership, we came across this article that was talking about petty Blaylock, which is a term for vilifying a person when there's really nothing impeccable or there's nothing really wrong in their character and what they're doing, what they're achieving. In order to vilify them, you just pick up on petty little things to try to destroy their character. And it's a tactic in the realm of politics, which is really fascinating. With this particular article that we had to read was in the Lebanon, where the leader of the country was actually turning things around, rebuilding after the civil war, and his political opponents just couldn't find anything to pull him down with. And so they just started finding all this petty stuff. And a lot of times this name calling or picking up on one isolated word is a political tactic to try to undermine the reputation of someone, to impeach their character in a way that you can discredit them, their whole message. And certainly it's a human tendency. It's a tactic that's out there. Now, at the same time, Chris, I think we do need to be a little bit sensitive. Like if there's a word that's offensive to a particular group of people, I didn't know it was offensive. I say it and then they give me feedback like, hey, you know, better not to say that. I should be sensitive enough
but
to say
have,
stop
I
using
think,
it.
I think we've gone too far. So,
oh, without a doubt.
My wife is half Asian. I didn't know until recent years that the term Oriental is now considered offensive. Do you know what Oriens means?
East. Rising of the sun. Yes.
Right. So mm-hmm. referring to somebody as an Easterner, do you know what the opposite of that is?
A Westerner?
Would be Occidental.
Yes.
And so...
Not accidental. Occidental.
Right. So yeah. If you refer to somebody as an Occidental, would that be offensive versus saying they are
no.
Oriental? It's
yeah, exactly.
ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's the thing. The nature of language is that there's things that they are describing something that is actually accurate. But when some people start to take offense at something and, you know, it's just offensive to them personally, we should be sensitive to that. But at the same time, you know, their language is what it is. So, for example, people get in trouble every once in a while for using the word niggardly because they think it sounds like something
right.
else, which is offensive to some
right.
some black people, to
right.
African-Americans.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with that.
Right. It means cheap.
Yeah, it means cheap. It means on the cheap. But people misunderstand language sometimes. So it's also occasionally a test of intelligence to see what people are taking offense at. I came across one of the saints, I don't remember who it was, but I came across one of their writings recently that said, when people stop focusing on their own conversion and their own growth in holiness and turning away from sin, they tend to hyper-focus on outside things and on what's going on in the world. And so it's a displaced moralism. And sometimes I think that can happen with language. We just express all this outrage about a word and we get very thin skin, which I think is just a symptom, deeper symptom of problems in society.
We get thin skinned except for when it really matters. I mean, using the Lord's name in vain.
That's serious.
Is serious.
Yeah, it's very serious. And it's one of the commandments, right. One of the Ten Commandments. So I think you make a good case, Chris, for let's get back to the basics. Let's give importance to what truly has important and let go of the little things in life that really are piddly.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Rock legend Ozzy Osbourne died recently. Mm. He was the front man of pioneering metal band Black Sabbath. You know who?
I've heard his name before, but I must confess, Chris, I'm making a public confession here, my ignorance of pop culture. I've heard the name, but was he vocalist or guitarist?
He was vocalist for Black Sabbath.
Okay.
Okay.
Was it just Black Sabbath or did he?
Well, then he went out on his own. He got kicked out of the band for drinking and drugs.
Okay.
But he was known as the Prince of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So he sang songs, or they sang songs. He later, by himself, sang songs glorifying Satan, and he, you know, famously bit the head off of a live bat in a night.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, hearing that story.
Right. So they used, you know, their band used some dark occult imagery, probably sure. for shock value,
mm-hmm.
okay, more than genuine, you know, religious belief. But in 1989, he was famously arrested for attempting to murder his wife, Sharon.
Hmm.
He had no recollection of the event when he was being question mm-hmm. by police. He they interviewed Sharon, and she said that he was very calm, but he said right before he attempted to kill her, "We've come to a decision that you've got to die."
Hmm.
So Black Sabbath inspired similar bands like Iron Maiden, who's one of their most famous songs sure. was 666, Number of the Beast.
Mm-hmm. And you're going deep into some culture I really haven't participated in.
Well, okay, where I'm going here is there seemed to be this, with heavy metal bands back in the 80s, there was a popularity and they
with
all...
this satanic...
Yeah, and they like just Iron Maiden, you look at every one of their album covers, it's, you know, it's demon-like.
Yeah, right.
What they're depicting.
Right.
It seemed to die out, the heavy metal... influence in pop. I mean, it's always been there, but now there's a resurgence. There. Yeah. There's this band called Ghost mm-hmm. that has two of their popular songs are Mary on a Cross, this blasphemous song about Mary,
or
seemingly blasphemous song about Mary. And then another one just gets right to the, you know, heart of it. It's called Satanized. I mean, if you look at the lyrics of this song, it's
wow.
Yeah. So heavy metal music, is this harmless fun? Or are you playing with danger?
That's a really good question. I watched recently with my community members a documentary on how the Christian music market came of age, and one of the big bands there was Stryper, and they were there like this Christian alternative to the heavy metal during that time period in the 80s, and so you could make a case that the music in and of itself is not the problem. It's like the darkness that people get into and the occult, because there are manifestations in what that case you just talked about with Ozzy Osbourne, that's textbook case of demonic possession,
right?
A person carrying out something under demonic possession, which they would never do of their own volition. So there's clearly some dark stuff there. So you could make the case that it's just because of certain trends there. Other people would make the case that the music in and of itself lends itself to darker forces. And Aristotle in his Poetics actually talks about that. Aristotle makes the case that there are certain rhythms that tap into the bestial part of our nature, the lower part of our nature. The same thing you could say about rap, you know, the rhythms, the beat, the deep bass, that you're not even listening to the music, but it's tapping into kind of an animal side of us that elicits the dark. And you go to a disco or to a rave, what's going on there? It's a deep pulsating music, which is getting people to let go of their inhibitions. So I think you could make a case also that the very nature of the music lends itself to bringing out a certain side of human nature or a letting go of inhibitions. I don't know.
I was a fan of some metal bands in the 80s. You know, I think the first concert I ever went to was Van Halen. Mm. But, you know, when things started to trend in their imagery toward the dark,
darker,
I was never into Black Sabbath.
Right.
Okay, I was immediately like turned off by them and Iron Maiden. That was easy.
Yeah. Well, and I had some cases when I was of friends that I had in high school that got involved in some of this darker music, and they had demonic, oppression and manifestations in their life, in their homes. And we shared some stories about stuff that was going on. It's like, I don't want to have anything to do with that stuff.
Well, there's certainly tons of, you know, rock and heavy metal rock songs that are catchy, but I don't think anybody would ever describe them as beautiful. And lots of music
Correct.
Can be beautiful.
Yeah.
And beautiful, right, is another word for truth, right?
Yes.
So
yeah, it's one of the transcendentals, the one, the true, the good, and the beautiful. And certainly you don't find that in some of that music. And music has a profound power to influence us. It changes our moods. It can open us to beautiful and good things, or it can lead us down a dark path. My younger brother was a very talented guitarist and vocalist. And during high school, he started mimicking certain rock songs and playing them over and over. Like, he played American Pie, I think, 550 times until he could sing it better than the original version. And the very lyrics of the song started to morph his way of looking at the world. Not that it's necessarily a bad song, and it's certainly not a dark heavy metal song like we were talking about, but that song itself changed his behavior, made him more rebellious, and he acknowledges that. So music does affect us, and we need to be careful what we expose ourselves to.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. In Tennessee, an adopted embryo that was frozen for 30 plus years has given rise to what some claim is the oldest baby in the world.
Mm.
The biological mother and her then husband froze the embryo while undergoing IVF in the 1990s.
Yes.
After having a baby girl, the couple was left with three embryos in the bank, one of which is the baby boy that was born July 26, 2025.
Mm-hmm.
In Australia, embryos can be frozen for up to 5 years. In the UK, they can be stored for 55 years. In the United States, there is no limit. By some estimates, there are currently 1.5 million frozen embryos in the U.S. Among other moral problems potentially associated with IVF, what are your thoughts about the fact that this boy has a sister who's 30 years older than him and the possibility that you could have a sibling that's 80 or 100 years older than you?
Mm-hmm. Well, it just throws a monkey wrench into the natural order of things. There's no doubt about it. I know a couple here in Atlanta that are really good friends, and they give a public witness to the fact that they, you know, used IVF and they had a frozen embryos as well. And they have a son who is, I think, 16 years younger than his twin brothers, because they were twins. They were triplets.
Identical?
Identical.
Okay, that's weird.
It's really weird. And they have the most moving testimony of their own change of heart through this process, which was, it's remarkable. And, you know, when we start messing with God's creation, sometimes we can create a lot of problems for ourselves, whether it's with viruses or with messing with the human life. We're made in the image and likeness of God.
Well, that is really strange to have an identical that's 16 years. I mean, that's really a testament, though, to their commitment to their faith if they follow through. And
yeah, I think they had like 7 or 8 embryos still frozen, and the clinic had advised them, hey, you need to keep paying for this. And the dad was like, I'm not going to pay for that. I'll just let him die. It's just, you know, it's tissue. And the wife had started to come back to her faith a little bit more. She said, no, wait a second. Those are babies. They're human life. And they talked it over and they wrestled. And finally the husband came around and actually had a very emotional moment with God. It kind of made it really clear to him that, yes, you need to listen to your wife on this. And they attempted to implant successively each one of the embryos that was left over. All of them died and did not come to term except for the one. And now they've got this boy who just graduated from high school, I think a year or two ago.
Wow.
Who's a younger brother of his twin siblings.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's, like I said, even if you were to do perfectly ethically, morally correct in making sure you follow through and implant mm-hmm. each of these embryos, it's still kind of weird, especially if you have an identical that's
it really
know,
is.
Could be generational, you know, a difference in your age.
But it's amazing that they give such a powerful testimony to the value of human life and their own conversion of God helping them to see that, you know, every life is precious, and that these embryos that are frozen right now, they could come to life. They could come to term if we treat them with the respect and dignity that they deserve. And this is one of the moral qualms behind the whole IVF industry. Obviously not treating with dignity these human beings and putting them in cryopreservation. And that obviously the death rate is very high when you try to implant these embryos, which have been frozen for a long time. So there's many complications involved with the IVF industry. And this is why the church, you know, looks upon it with a fair degree of skepticism and say, hey, is this really what we want to be doing? Is this how we want to be treating people and having people realize that they're a product rather than a fruit of love?
Well, and there's also something about the human experience of siblinghood.
Totally.
That, you know, the age matters. I mean, it's part of the dynamic of, you know, definitely my family, that, you know, the sibling and the interactions that they have growing up and my interactions with my siblings, it's part of the fabric of who I am.
It definitely is. And it also relates back to the age of parents, because, you know, in God's design, people have children when they're fairly young and flexible and malleable and have more energy. And when people are delaying marriage now, what's happening is that people who are 33, 35 years old are saying, well, I'll freeze my embryos and I'll have babies later. And they're having children when they're 38, 42, 46 with these, you know, artificial help. Their bodies are not able to adjust to it. Their psychology is not able to raise children as well as younger people. So there's a whole host of problems that come along with this, Chris.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
When immigration lawyers sought to defend a North Texas construction worker detained in early March, they couldn't find him. Records initially showed that Felix Morales, a 28-year-old Mexican father who was in the country presumably illegally, that he was supposed to be in Alvarado, Texas, just south of Fort Worth. But he was actually more than 200 miles away in Oklahoma. By the time his law firm found him, he had been physically moved to Colorado, but his jurisdiction was moved to a town in Anson, or a city called Anson, Texas.
Okay.
Over 3 months, as he was shuttled through detention centers in Oklahoma, Colorado, New Mexico, and California, his family and lawyers say they received no notice. He bounced through at least 3 different jurisdictions from his physical location.
Mm-hmm.
His family kept trying to file bond motions to bail him out, but they kept getting rejected because they were in the wrong jurisdiction. They filed bond motions 20 times.
Wow. And his family's where?
In Fort Worth.
In Fort Worth. Okay.
The government, you know, explains that these moves were because the detention centers had become overcrowded. Mm-hmm. You know, the high rate of transfers is also possibly part of the Department of Homeland Security's, you know, tactic to to move folks to avoid them fleeing while on bond, sure, to mm-hmm. then recapture them if they're in fact found to be in the country, you know, illegally. So notwithstanding your views on immigration, the phrase unalienable rights comes from the Declaration of Independence.
Correct.
Where it refers to rights that just can't be transferred mm-hmm. by transferred away there.
Well, and that they stem from natural law.
Right.
That they precede any law that we are dictating or inventing, that they're based on the inherent dignity of the human person as made in the image and likeness of
Absolutely.
God.
The philosophical idea is that certain rights are so fundamental that Correct. They exist prior to government.
That's right.
So what are your thoughts about, like I said, notwithstanding the general immigration laws, about this moving people around? I mean, I can't imagine being the family of this person, not knowing where they are, or being the person really themselves distraught. Thinking that your family is trying to help you, but then, you know, there's no way.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't really understand why they would have to move them around so much, but certainly when we talk about inalienable rights, what we're talking about here is the dignity of the human person, their right to a fair trial, their right to be treated with dignity. Those are key things. And I think when you start shuttling people around like cattle, that can start to impinge upon that treatment with dignity. And if you're doing that intentionally to block the possibility of legal recourse, that's very problematic. And I think we're not treating people with the dignity and respect that they deserve.
What about the notion that you're then incented to have border protection measures and standards that become so much more stringent so that you don't, you know, this is a clear, to me, violation of a person's due process.
Mm-hmm.
So one way to combat that would be to have more stringent measures to avoid the person being able to migrate in the first place.
In the first place, right.
Okay, so that seemingly would be morally neutral,
mm-hmm.
but the Vatican's stance, or the church's stance on migration, is that people have the right to, you know, because of the universal destination of goods, that people mm-hmm. have the right to migrate.
Yes, but it also has to be balanced with the right of a nation to protect its sovereignty and
Absolutely.
Its borders.
Right.
And even Pope Francis recognized that. Sometimes he would tend a little bit more towards, let's not build walls. But he also talked about the importance of a country to be able to defend its borders. So there are, in a sense, rival values, even within Catholic moral teaching, that have to be balanced according to the circumstances. And that's never easy. And the church provides the principles, but then it's up to the political discourse within a country and people to work it out and figure out what is best under the circumstances that we're facing right now. So, for example, here in the United States, I totally agree with you, Chris. Due process in this case is not being respected, and that's not good. But on the flip side, there's been such an influx of people that it's overwhelmed the system and made it impossible to process all these claims, because it takes a certain amount of time and resources.
Well, not just the system, too. It's actually overwhelms the right to private property. I have friends in South Texas who have hunting ranches or hunting leases
mm-hmm.
that they have for decades left food stores out for migrants who come across the property.
Right.
Because if they don't, they break into the house.
Mm.
And, you know, some of these folks... Or maybe because there were so many of them coming across in recent times, they're doing so, even like breaking into the house respectfully. There was one instance where they broke into the house, cooked up what was ever in the fridge, cleaned everything meticulously, and left a note saying, thank you, but we were hungry. It's
Sorry.
Like, who can be upset about
sure.
that, right? But back to my statement about it being morally neutral, about having a more stringent border barrier to not have to deal with the due process.
I don't know that it's morally neutral. I think there's a responsibility on the part of the government to maintain its borders and to treat people with respect. I think all of those factors are not morally neutral. They need to be properly balanced. And so we need to treat people with dignity and respect and help people to find a better life. But we also need to respect our borders and respect the due process and rule of law. And it's no easy matter to balance all those things in the real day-to-day stuff.
Right. Well, I think where maybe Pope Francis potentially erred was speaking specifically about some of the policies in the U.S. when the Vatican itself controls access to its borders.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, what you're...
Let me stop for a second, because you said Pope Francis erred. You know, for a lot of Catholics that were like, whoa, isn't the Pope infallible? You know, and I think that our understanding of infallibility has probably grown over the recent years. And we realize that papal infallibility does not apply to every single thing that comes out of the Pope's mouth.
It applies to hardly anything that comes out of the Pope's mouth.
It's things that are related to faith and morals when the Pope is pronouncing ex cathedra. Now, we should have respect for what the Pope says. Like, you know, it's a he is our father in the faith. And so we want, well, I liken it sometimes to, you know, my dad's getting older. Okay, he's 73 years old now. And sometimes my dad will say some barbarous things, you know, and I'll say, you know, I'll be respectful of my dad, but I don't have to necessarily believe what he's saying or follow his dictate. I don't have, you know, I don't have a vow of obedience to my dad, but I treat him with respect. And it is in a similar analogous way, I think that's how we have to understand the papal infallibility and our duty of respect towards the Pope. Even if we disagree with something, we should kind of take a harder look at it. So I just wanted to clarify
I was really trying to amplify was that I think it was wrong to single out the United States and their immigration when you should be just very elucidating immigration policies generally.
Mm-hmm. And sticking with the principles that then we've got to figure out in the concrete circumstances. The Pope is in Rome and he doesn't understand everything that's going on in border situations, and he gets a certain set of information from whatever sources he's relying on, but that's not infallible. And when the Pope pronounces on matters of prudential judgment, it's not papal infallibility there. And so there is a legitimate space for disagreement on practical application, but we should maintain a respectful air towards the Pope always.
Well, but I think we can all agree that the vanishing of migrants in the ICE detention system where their families can't find them, that's wrong.
It is problematic. And we have to look and see, is that intentionally so? Or is it because just an overwhelming of the system? And what can we do to rectify it to treat people with respect and dignity?
Yeah, good point.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.